Thanks. Well, it has been a week and just busy, busy, busy. We were at a prayer chaplain trainer training these past 3 days, and it was wonderful, and yet I'm what do I do now? I noticed as I got home yesterday evening that my grass needed cut. And so when I saw this morning, I thought, this is too good. I've got to share this with you. This is a conversation between God and St. Francis. God says, "Francis, you know all about gardens and nature. What in the world is going on down there in the U.S.? What happened to the dandelions, violets, thistles, and the stuff I started eons ago? I had a perfect no-maintenance garden plan. Those plants grow in any type of soil, withstand drought, and multiply with abandon. The nectar from the long-lasting blossoms attracts butterflies, honeybees, and flocks of songbirds. I expected to see a vast garden of color by now. All I see are patches of green." St. Francis said, "It's the tribes that settle there, Lord. They are called the suburbanites. They started calling your flowers weeds and went to great lengths to kill them and replace them with grass." God, "Grass? But it's so boring and it's not colorful. It doesn't attract butterflies, birds, or bees, only grubs and sodworms. It's temperamental with temperatures. Do these suburbanites really want grass growing?" St. Francis, "Apparently not, Lord. As soon as it has grown a little, they cut it. Sometimes 2 times a week." God says, "They cut it? Do they bale it like hay?" St. Francis, "Not exactly, Lord. Most of them rake it up and put it in bags." God says, "Oh, they bag it? Why? Is it a cash crop? Do they sell it?" St. Francis, "No, sir. Just the opposite. They pay to throw it away." God says, "Let me get this straight. They fertilize it to make it grow, and when it does grow, they cut it and pay to throw it away." St. Francis, "Yes, sir." God says, "These suburbanites must be relieved in the summer when we cut back on the rain and turn up the heat. That surely slows the growth and saves them a lot of work." St. Francis, "You aren't going to believe this, Lord, but when the grass stops growing so fast, they drag out hoses and they pay more money to water it so they can continue to mow it and pay to get rid of it." God says, "What nonsense. At least they kept some of the trees." I think this is hilarious. "That was a sheer stroke of genius, if I do say so myself. The trees grow leaves in the spring to provide beauty and shade in the summer. In the autumn, they fall to the ground and form a natural blanket to keep the moisture in the soil and protect the trees and the bushes. Plus, as they rot, the leaves become compost to enhance the soil. It's a natural circle of life." St. Francis, "You'd better sit down, Lord." "As soon as the leaves fall, the suburbanites rake them into great piles and pay to have them hauled away." God says, "No way. What do they do to protect the shrubs and tree roots in the winter to keep the soil moist and loose?" St. Francis, "After throwing the leaves away, they go out and they buy something called mulch. They haul it home and spread it around in place of the leaves." God, "And where do they get this mulch?" St. Francis, "They cut down the trees and grind them up to make mulch." God, "Enough. I don't want to think about this anymore. St. Catherine, you're in charge of the arts. What movie have you selected for tonight?" St. Catherine, "Dumb and Dumber." "Lord, it's a really stupid movie about..." God, "Never mind. I think I just heard the whole story from St. Francis." Great. Which really has little to do with what we're talking about today, but I just thought it was so good. That song that we just heard, that "I Hope You Dance," I love that song. And the first time I heard it was at chapel service when I was in ministerial school. Chapel service is it's an experience that we have as then second year, final year students. We were to do a chapel service, and you plan everything. You plan the order of service, you plan the music, you plan obviously you do the talk and the meditation, but you plan everything about that service, and it's sort of an indication of whether you're ready or not, you know, to go out and do church ministry. It's just like a Sunday service. So that song was the one that my classmate and dear friend played, and I hadn't heard it before. I thought it was really good. And interestingly, the picture that Bernetta chose for that, in her talk, I remember her throwing open her arms, you know, and whatever the topic was, it was like that, and then there was the the picture that was much like it. Okay, so I saw that song. I was reminded of the chapel service. The chapel service also had something else that was new for me, and it was that they had what they called, I believe, chapel angels, and they were there to hold spiritual space. Sometimes there were two, sometimes there were four. If you looked at them, all you saw was just a person sitting, often with their eyes closed. That's all you saw, and they were there holding spiritual space. That was a new concept for me. I hadn't really heard it in that fashion before, but it's very powerful. This past time that we've just spent, these past 3 days, we have, you know, it was prayer chaplain trainer training. So if we're a little flaky, I think it's because we've been praying for 3 days. So we're kind of out here. But we did a lot with prayer. We did a lot with spiritual space. In fact, you know, we talked, the main point of being a prayer chaplain is to pray with people. And the very first thing that we do is hold spiritual space. So it's a powerful concept. It's an important concept. You might think, well, what is this spiritual space? I think it might help to maybe address three questions as we talk about spiritual space or sacred space. And let's talk maybe about, first, what it is not, and then second, what it is, and then third, how do we do that? How do we get to that place of being spiritually centered? What it is not. It was 1995, and I took a class with Reverend Karen, as a matter of fact, at First Unity called the Quest class. It was a wonderful class for me. It gave me a foundation from which I've been able to exist, you know, to not only live, but to thrive, a spiritual foundation it was just powerful, powerful, powerful. It was a year-long class, and during that year, we lost Karen. She went to ministerial school, and Reverend Randy took over. But at the beginning of the class, there was a question that was asking about whether we had a place in our home that we could use for meditation or prayer, and I didn't at the time. And it talked about setting up something called an altar. So I did create a space. At that time, I was married, so in the bedroom, I had a secretary that meant a lot to me. It was my grandmother's, and my uncle gave it to me after she passed away. She was the woman who taught me what unconditional love is like, so it was very special to me. So I used that as my place that I sat, and I would journal there, and I would meditate there. I did create a sacred place. I created a space where I could do that. As time went on, I separated, divorced, got a different house. Practices kind of changed. The location of my space changed. Sometimes I had a room that was a sacred room or a special room. And for a while, I was doing. I'd have a chair. I have a space. I would have area to write in. I would play music when it was time to actually sit down and meditate. I would play music. Would often light a candle. I might have incense that was going, you know, just to create sacred space. And that was fine. And what I have learned since then is that's all wonderful, but I don't have to have that. That's all out there. You know, it can enhance, but I can go to sacred space without any of those props. So that's not it exactly. It is not out there. There's a story I wanted to share with you about a woman who wanted to know what heaven was like. It starts out, once upon a time. I also read something that says, you can tell the difference between a northern story, fairy tale, and a southern one, because a northern one will start out, once upon a time. A southern story will start out, y'all ain't gonna believe this, but... So this northern story starts out, once upon a time there was a woman who longed to find out what heaven is like. She prayed constantly, oh God, grant me in this life a vision of paradise. She prayed in this way for years until one night she had a dream. In her dream, an angel came and led her to heaven. They walked down a street in paradise until they came to an ordinary looking house. The angel, pointing toward the house, said, go and look inside. So the woman walked in the house and found a person preparing supper, another reading the newspaper, and children playing with their toys. Naturally, she was disappointed and returned to the angel on the street. Is this all there is to heaven? The angel replied, those people you saw in that house are not in paradise. Paradise is in them. Yeah. So what it is not some special thing, tool, place. What is it? What is this sacred space? I went to Webster's to look it up. We had talked a couple weeks ago when we were talking about holy ground. We said that holy and sacred are kind of synonymous. You see them often. And it pertains to the divine, anything that is pertaining to the divine. Webster says, one of the definitions for sacred says that it is, I can't read my own writing, sacred is entitled to religious respect by association with divinity or divine things. So, entitled to religious respect according to divinity or divine things. Sacred. Association with divinity, which is much like what we had talked about before. I already mentioned that we had our prayer chaplain training this past weekend, or actually Thursday night, Friday, Saturday, the trainer training. And the first activity that we did and that we do in our prayer chaplain training is teach people about holding spiritual space. It is the first thing that we do when we begin to listen to someone's prayer, someone who wants to have prayer. We hold spiritual space. The definition, according to Leilani's material, says that holding spiritual space means to consciously call on the presence of God. Consciously call on the presence of God. And then I like this one. She also says that it is holding a space of possibility. When in the prayer chaplain program, when we see someone coming up to us, it's important that we get to that space. We'll talk more about that space, that sacred space. Because in that place, we do see the possibility. If we see someone walking toward us who has an obvious ailment of some kind, it's very important that we see the possibility, that we see past that appearance and can see the space of their wholeness and their health and their vitality. A space of possibility. So spiritual space, then, is a conscious calling out to God, a place of knowing what can be, despite what we might be seeing with our outer eyes. And I think what rings really true and just resonates with me so powerfully in this whole program and in our training is when we are serving as prayer chaplains, and we can do it too, is that we when we are dealing with sacred, when we are trying to live an experience from a sacred place, that we want to stay out of our heads and our intellects, and we want to be in our hearts. If I'm in my head, if I'm thinking about stuff, and I can tell, can you not tell when you're in your head? You know, it's, I'm looking for reasons why that's wrong or that's right, or I'm up here, I'm thinking all the time. But if I'm in my heart, I might be noticing that a person is sitting off by themselves. If I'm in my heart, I see things differently, I hear things differently, and hopefully I say things differently. It's a different emphasis, a different perspective. So what is it? It is a place of calling on God. It is an association with something that is divine. We in unity teach, believe, try to practice that divinity within us, the Christ within, is who and what we want to be. We want to express that. We want to be that. And so to be in a sacred place is to be in connection with that divinity, with that Christ self. How do we do that? How do we get there? How do we get this sacred space thing? Another story that I found in this book that I really like. This is a conversation between a disciple and an elder. And the disciple is looking for enlightenment, but we could substitute the words sacred space just as easily. "Where shall I look for sacred space?" the disciple asked. "Here," the elder answered. "When will it happen?" "It's happening right now," the elder answered. "Then why don't I experience it?" the disciple persisted. "Because you do not look," the elder said. "What do I look for?" the disciple continued. "Nothing, just look," the elder said. "But at what?" the disciple asked again. "At anything your eyes alight upon," the elder answered. "But must I answer in a, or must, excuse me, must I look in a special kind of way?" the disciple went on. "No, the ordinary way will do," the elder said. "But don't I always look the ordinary way?" the disciple said. "No, you don't," the elder said. "But why ever not?" the disciple asked. "Because to look, you must be here. You're mostly somewhere else." And aren't we often somewhere else? It's been hard for me to be here today. I just came out of this training. I am buying a house. I am selling a house. I'm going on a cruise Friday. I am just beside myself. There is so much to do, and just be here now. And then I find that peace again. Find that peace again. So I want to do a couple of things. First of all, we've done something like this before, but when someone says that I want to be present for you, what does that mean? That means that they want to totally listen. They want to be open. They want to be present. They're not going to be doing something else. They're not going to be, hopefully, thinking of something else. They're being present. I want you to look at your hand. And I want you to be present to your hand. If you can, notice how your hand is feeling. Can you feel the air on your skin? When you're present to your hand, you begin to, for me, there's sort of I can almost feel like not quite a tingling, but I'm very much aware of the sensations that are going on in my hand. If I move a finger and back down, I can feel it. I can feel the skin of one finger touching the other. Did you notice a difference? I mean, normally we just, yep, there's my hand. But if you're totally present to your hand, you can do that with your any, you can do it with your foot, you can do it with your arm, you can do it with anything. You can do it, we do it every week when we say, move your attention to your breath. We're moving our attention out away from the outer, our racing minds. We're moving our attention to something else, to the breath. And I have one other thing that I would like to have us experience. If I could ask Pat and Linda to come forward. The bags are there. If each of you would take a bag of oranges. You can, each person gets one orange. And I'll take one. Good. You don't have to give them back. You get to keep them. Reverend Josette Jackson snuck in. She's in the back pew. We welcome you, Josette. Thank you. Okay, so you have your orange. We're going to be present to the orange. First, just look at it. Mine has spots all over it. And I notice the bright orange color. Look at your orange. Turn it. See the shape. It's not quite round. Hold it in your hand. Mine is cold. Feel with your other hand, feel the texture of the skin. Kind of rough, kind of smooth. Gets rougher around the bottom where there's an indentation. Hold it up to your nose. If you can't quite smell it, you might gently, with your fingernail, just press into it. And you can smell the orange. Our bodies are wired so that when we smell something good, then the juices start flowing. Our saliva might, you know, like, we might begin to anticipate what that orange might taste like. But right now, we're smelling the orange. I'm not going to have us peel it here. But I'm going to invite you to take your orange home this afternoon. Take it home. And this afternoon, continue this. And what I would suggest that you do when you get home is to get back into that place where you see it, you feel it, smell it, and then begin to peel it. Notice, and you can remember from peeling past oranges, that there's the white part that's underneath the skin. And then there, as you finally peel it away, notice how hard it is to get the peeling away from it. And you have the fruit. I invite you when you're there to separate the orange into like two big chunks, two sections. Smell that, because it's even going to be stronger smell than it is right now. When you take one segment from the whole, just taste it with your tongue first. And then take a bite and let it sit in your mouth for a few moments. and let the experience and the taste of the orange segment just roll around in your mouth. And then begin to chew it. Notice what it feels like when you chew and your teeth connect, the consistency, the texture of the orange segment. And then swallow. What we are doing, what we will do as we continue to experience the orange, is we are being mindful. It's called mindfulness. It's being totally present. What do we know that God is? Everywhere present. We know, I had a teacher, Linda Poole Kennedy, who taught, and she would say, God is life, love, wisdom, power, and substance. Life, love, wisdom, power, and substance. So we did that over and over. God is life. This is a simple orange. If we were to consider anything, everything, we look around, we see each other. We look around, we see the piano. We look in your home, look around. Notice what you see. When you can be present, when you can see God everywhere and in everything, you have just created sacred space. And I think then we can go on to say that life can be simply sacred. Let's practice the presence. Putting our oranges down. We might still smell the orange on our hands. But let's get comfortable in our seats. Allow your body to relax. Allow it to be totally supported by the seat that you're in. In this place, in this time, we are safe. There is nowhere that we are supposed to be, nothing that we are supposed to be doing other than being here now. As we begin to quiet ourselves, our bodies first, and then our minds, we can feel all of the stresses, all of the pressures, the busyness, we can feel it dropping away, melting away. And we begin to be present to our breath. We begin to focus simply on our bodies, bringing in the air, holding it for a second, and releasing. We breathe in again and release. Sometimes to give our mind something to do, we might want to attach words. So as we breathe in, we can say, God is. On the exhale, we can say, I am. God is, I am. And in this relaxing, in this letting go, in this focusing on the breath, we begin to feel that sacred space. That interior place where we are at one with the divine. We rest there. This is the truth of our being, our connection, our oneness. This sacred space gives us anything and everything we need in the moment. Here we find peace. Here we find love. Here we find ourselves open and receptive, willing. We stop our talking and we listen. Here we come to be filled. It is here in this sacred space that we realize once again the truth of who and what we are. It is here once again that we can remember to look past appearances. It is here that we can remember to celebrate the simple things in life, to savor the times that we have with our families and our friends. It's here that we remember what is truly important. And as we spend time this way, on a regular basis, we find ourselves being more and more grounded, more and more anchored to this oneness, this unity, this peace, and this love. And we are better and better able to move through life confidently, peacefully, and lovingly. It's not to say that there aren't storms in the outer world. There are. But these times of oneness, of connection, allow us to move through those times in peace. We more quickly get our feet back under us. It is in this silence that we become open and receptive to God's currency, which is divine ideas. And they flow to us easily when we aren't blocked, when we aren't setting up pictures of what it has to be. We are willing to receive. And so as we do each week, we spend some time in silence to feel this connection, to experience this peace and love, and to be one with our Creator in the silence. We are renewed. We are re-energized. If we were feeling frazzled, we become smooth, peaceful. If we were frightened, we find courage and strength. If we were worried, we find ourselves being able to let go of any fears. We are so grateful. Grateful for the awareness of the truth of our beings. We are spiritual beings, creations of the Most High, here to be all that we can be. We are grateful that God is everywhere present, which means that God is here now in us and through us and as us. We are never alone. We are grateful for this companionship, for this guidance, for this never-ending love. And as we begin to bring ourselves back into this time, into this space, we come back filled, renewed, hopeful, peaceful, and loving. And as we do each week, we complete this time by affirming together our Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.